It was a case that went cold four decades ago, cold and cruel. The killings of three young civil rights workers in Mississippi. On Monday, a man will finally stand trial for those killings. Cynthia Bowers reports on a long search for truth and justice carried out by a new generation of high school students who grew up hundreds of miles away.
This trio from an affluent suburban Chicago high school played a role most students don't get. They helped change history.
I don't think it hit us that this was actually happening until we got the call that Killen had been arrested.
Killen is Edgar Ray Killen. The former Klan leader was arrested in January for the 1964 murders of three young civil rights workers, Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner. And some of the credit goes to the students and their school project, a documentary investigating the murders.
I think we helped draw attention to the murders and really just kind of spark it.
The students' documentary wasn't the first to look into the murders. Hollywood's version, Mississippi Burning, came out 17 years ago. But without a blockbuster budget, Sarah Siegel, Brittany Sautiel, and Allison Nichols looked into questions the film left hanging, spending hundreds of hours poring over documents, watching old news footage, talking to investigators, and even having a phone conversation with Killen himself.
They were trying to undercover recruit the young blacks for the communist movement.
After talking to family members of the boys who were murdered, the project was no longer something that we did for school.
So the sophomores pushed on. Despite receiving threatening emails to quit digging, the students urged the governor of Mississippi and members of Congress to take another look at the murders. Congressman John Lewis knew the three slain civil rights workers, and after meeting with the students, helped to draft the congressional resolution to reopen the case.
So these three young women, they got in the way. And sometimes you have to be creative to get in the way.
The students never got a grade or school credit for the project, but say they did learn a valuable lesson about sacrifice.
If you care about something, and if you're affected by something, it's not enough to just sit there and talk about it. You have to take action, and you have to see what you can do to help.
The teenagers will be watching Killen's trial closely, hoping their history project will finally end in justice. Cynthia Bowers, CBS News, Chicago.
Welcome back to part two of Mississippi Still Burning by James Hart Stern, written by white female Autumn Robinson. I don't want to give a synopsis on part one, go back and listen to it because it's a lot, and I want to make sure I finish everything that I have in this part two so I don't have to extend it. So please listen to part one. Lots of valuable information and very constructive. Let's just get into part two. I left off on part one with the, technology here, lagging. There we go. Come on, man. There we go. So where I left off, they were putting together a plan to take away the government and, you know, not even the government. I'll just say racists within the government. Racists in Mississippi were putting together a plan to take the focus off the Vietnam War to help out Lyndon Baines Johnson because of the bad publicity, I guess, he was receiving. And so that's where we are. Oh, my God. Okay, So I'll read the last part again that I left off on. When they sat down to meet, Senator James Oliver Eastland shared the plan that he had to incite the people and to distract attention from the Vietnam War. He said, "I need you to come and do something for me. Edgar, I need you to have the boys start to killing every black boy under the age of 16. That's in quotes. That order was incredibly specific. Edgar asked the senator, "Why under 16? And if you wanted us to kill them niggers, why don't we just kill them?" Eastland answered and said, "No, they must be under the age of 16. I can't protect you if you kill the ones under age 16. The reason that Edgar could be protected if the boys were under the age of 16 is that in Mississippi, the law stated specifically that there is no such thing as kidnapping a black male that's under the age of 16. Let me just insert black male privilege. There goes your black male privilege. Any Negro under 16 years of age was snatched. They weren't considered to be kidnapped, even if their parents reported their sons were missing. The police and the sheriff didn't have anything that they could do about it because there hadn't been any crime committed at all. But the specific provisions of the law, those particular kidnapping charges had to be dropped against Edgar Ray Killen and his henchmen. These were some of the Jim Crow laws in Mississippi, which were in reality much more wide sweeping than just a set of laws to relegate black people's right to vote. Jim Crow laws were a way of life in Mississippi, and this particular law was on the books all the way up until well after 2005 when Edgar Ray Killen was convicted. It was after the state legislature of the state of Mississippi was convened to edit and update the original law and replace it with Mississippi Code 97-3-53, Kidnapping and Punishment. I'll say again, blackmail, there goes your blackmail privilege. Let's just start with the Jim Crow laws. The first Jim Crow law was started in the North. So let's not just start with the South thing, the South. This is racist code worldwide. There's nowhere you're getting, look at Minnesota, George Floyd, Florida, Trayvon Martin, Ohio, Tamir Rice, Texas, Sandra Bland, California, Oscar Grant, just any state. It's pretty much the same thing. So I resent the fact that, it's just a Mississippi thing. These are Jim Crow laws where black people aren't getting, just treatment just because they're Jim. It's bigger than that. It's the people. The people are upholding. White people, white racists are upholding this system. They are practicing racism. Like, and not to digress too much, I seen a lot about the Tim Scott guy and Kamala Harris agreeing with his assessment that America isn't racist. If you look at it logically, they are correct. How can the landmass be racist? The white people who practice racism make your experiences on the land what it is. It's not the land. You remove the people, the land isn't going to give you this experience. So technically they're right. And I've seen a lot of people, bashing and a lot of anti-blackness toward that. But if you look at it logically, it makes total sense. So information is what's needed. Lots of information is what's needed. But back to the book. I'm sorry to get off on a tangent, but everything connects. But, under 16, we had these funny style laws, which some of them are pretty stiff on the books. And, like a law really dictated how things were really handled. Moving on. Their task of going out and kidnapping any black boy that was under the age of 16, then torturing and killing them, was carried out with enthusiasm by these men. Like, I think it was Mitch DeNiro, white people kill for fun. The numbers were staggering, just staggering. No one ever listened to the mothers and fathers cry out for their missing boys, because that's just how it was. Powerlessness was a repeated song of black folks in Mississippi. Mississippi was the first state to adopt black codes, and many other states modeled their codes after those of the Magnolia State. Powerlessness, that part, that's correct. Power. This is what we're talking about. Power. The power to reward and punish. The power to kill with impunity. No regard. Nothing. Power. This is what this is all about. power. And that was, you know, that's correct use of terminology. I agree wholeheartedly. Powerlessness. And it's still today, you see the same tactics of, you know, what necessarily didn't work in the prior decades still being demonstrated today. No critique of the victims, but let's look at this thing logically. Let's try to come up with things that can be more effective. But, you know, VGQ. Continuing on, it wasn't until 2016 that the word Negro was even removed from the language of all United States federal government documents. Just the removal of language or monuments or inanimate objects, that doesn't change the fact of what's being practiced on this land. So, you know, the symbolic gestures are, you know, what they are, just symbolic. It doesn't indicate that the system is in any danger when you do these little symbolic gestures. So, you know, miss me with that. And, oh, we have a chapter titled All Lives Matter. Imagine your son just going missing and there was absolutely nothing that you can do about it. Records weren't kept accurately for black folks at that time. Yeah, I mean, whatever. According to Edgar Ray Killen, President Lyndon B. Johnson had told Senator James Eastland, a nigger will never have voting rights while I'm the president of the United States. That statement is contrary to everything and popular opinion about Johnson. Absolutely. But it also rings true. Johnson was well known for having played a careful game of chess with the civil rights movement during his time as president. Even if the outcome was positive, that doesn't mean that Johnson was untainted by the male violence that was all around him. I mean, that's pretty much self-explanatory. Good passage. Edgar put a light to my ignorance on all of that. He was clear that the reason that no one realized all of this for all these years was exactly because we were all ignorant idiots. He laughed about how the answers were right in front of us and we couldn't see them. Oh, this is why I love my racism up front. The answers are right in front of you. So when something seems so simple, we try to make it more complicated what it is to sound more intelligent. It just can't be that simple. The racism, the problem of racism can't be that simple. So we have to add on all these big syllabled words and, you know, sanitize it with different languages and words and all this nonsense. When like the racist said, it's right in front of you. I couldn't agree more. The answer is right in front of you, but sometimes it's so simple we don't think it's, you know, what it is. It has to be something more. We have to make it a little bit more complicated. So, like, this is why I like my races up front. You get with a more refined racist, they'll start talking about microaggressions. They'll start talking about white fragility, patriarchy, add a term, anti-trans, LB, just get a refine and they'll just have you all crossed up looking, you know, every way, which way, but the correct way. But let's go on. Okay. The first voters' right deal that President Lyndon Johnson cited gave black people two black people in particular, a seat. Listen to this part, a seat on the floor of the convention of the Democratic Party. They had no voting rights, but they were there. Though there was a Democratic National Convention every 4 years to decide on the party's nominee for president, there had never before been people allowed to participate. Fannie Lou Hamer and another gentleman went to the 1964 Democratic National Convention in New Jersey, but they were not allowed to have meaningful participation. That's something that no one ever thought about. Black folks were just so excited to have them there at all. There's two black people sitting on the floor of the convention, and it felt so good to see that we didn't really care beyond that. I mean, victims, victims of racism. That's why I referred to, you know, non-white people. When they assess something that, you know, doesn't seem logical or don't It's not construct victim, victim, victim of racism. I get it. We've been fostered. This has been, we've been encouraged to look at things upside down and in a non-logical manner. We have been conditioned to not see past, you know, it's conditioning. So victim of racism. Continuing on, the NAACP was founded in 1909 in New York City by a mixture of black and white activists. Among those were many of the Jewish community, including Henry Moskowitz. Hold on, let me switch hands. Henry Moskowitz, Francis Blascor, Jacob Schiff, Jacob Bilikoff, and Joel Spingarn. The Jewish community was always a huge supporter of the cause for free black freedom, leveraging their financial resources and legal know-how to fight for racial freedom. I would just say refined racist, if you ask me. Evidence proves that. You know, Donald Sterling is, you know, Jewish, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, we heard him on tape, so, you know. VGQ, if this is Mr. Stern, but if this is, you know, any of the suspected racism involved with this project, more racism being practiced. When Edgar Ray Killen and his men went beyond their original marching orders from Senator Eastland and killed Michael Schwerner and Andy Goodman, they were effectively sealing their fate of their cause. LBJ, who could up until now afford complacency about the murders happening in Mississippi, could not ignore the disappearance of these two Jewish young men from New York. And it's not funny. It's not funny at all. But two Jewish white men gets killed, and how many thousands of black people been killed, or even hundreds just during this time period have been killed, and people just don't bat an eye. You know, black life is worth nothing, and you know, it's nothing. it's not funny, but sometimes you just have to like. Just look at this, like, wow, the system. At a loss for words. Let's go. When President Johnson saw, before I go even further. And, like, it's stated that Killen and his men went beyond their original order. So the thing is, they didn't do what they were told by the more powerful white people. You know, you went a little bit too far. You killed some adults and, you know, some white men. So, you know, your protection is gone now. So you didn't follow orders. It's not that we believe in justice or, you know, we're trying to do the correct thing. You didn't follow your correct orders on how, you know, the more powerful whites wanted. So this is why your fate got sealed the way it did. So, you know, that's important to keep in mind. That's the why, you know, he ended up going to prison and the other people were convicted with those little light six-year sentences and below. Listen to this. When President Johnson sought Eastland for counsel about this dilemma that he was faced with, he said to the senator, "I have to find those two Jewish boys." White lives matter, right? All lives matter. This powerful man from Mississippi had the president send 2,000 troops to Mississippi. Never in the history of the United States had anything like this been done before, sending 2,000 federal troops to look for anyone, let alone two Jewish boys, and to be accurate, two Jewish white boys. The value they put on white life, I mean, you know, it's just not shocking, but it was good to have this reinforced, put together patterns of today. Do you see the same responses, you know, to black life? Is it still held in the same, you know, regards and whatnot, with the same carelessness? And if you ask me, yes, it just looks a little bit different. Continuing on, Eastland had delivered on his promise to take pressure off of Johnson in regard to Vietnam. Suddenly, the black people didn't have to be afraid. They didn't have to stay quiet about the crimes that had been taking place. Slowly but surely, the unthinkable began to unfold in the countryside of Mississippi. When the lakes and rivers were dredged When the woods were combed by troops, they found something on the order of 400. Let me go back. They found something on the order of 400 bodies in various states of decomposition. Wow. 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 And all this is discovered over these two Jewish white boys. The value of, you know, white life. How many, you know, black, how many of these people were black? I've had to wager it's majority. The value put on it. So even, you know, we're at odds. You're not acting in a way that we disagree with, but there's still value in your life that, you know, I'm going to send 2,000 troops to help, you know, recover your carcass. And you see, I heard this on Gus's show many years ago that, you know, he noticed the pattern of where they would just say Mickey Schwerner, Andy Goodman, and leave out James Chaney. You know, the value still isn't there. He isn't met. James Chaney isn't met with the same compassion that the two Jewish guys are. And it's a continuous pattern, even, you know, from 64 up until the present day. Still the, you know, it's just the two, Andy Goodman and Mickey Schwerner and the black kid. You know, he doesn't get mentioned by name much. So that is a pattern. There's still a devaluing of, you know, black life, although it looks a little bit different. Moving on. Catalyst for Change is the title of this chapter. How the movement really began with the media coming to the South. People were going missing, and none of it had mattered up until these points with the martyr of these two Jewish white boys, to be correct, Andrew Goodman and James Schwerner, truly giving their lives for a movement that would lead to real change. Without their sacrifice, none of the good things that followed would have ever happened, and black folks would very much be in the same place we have been. VGQ, if this is the victim, I mean, but it just shows the strength of, you know, two white lives opposed to, you know, thousands. If, you know, two white people get motivated to do something constructive, what can come about? So this should just show a lack of complacency on whites as a whole. This is really an indictment for me on white, especially, you know, the so-called well-meaning whites. I mean, these two white guys had so-called good intentions and created, they were the catalyst for change and, you know, the catalyst for all this. They gave their lives. So what does that say about, you know, the so-called good whites now that really care? And, you know, just is really an indictment on them. It kind of pokes a hole in that myth that, you know, a lot of victims like to point to about your Tim Wise and your Jane Elliott's and whatnot. It took their deaths to draw attention to the truth. The United States Justice Department came down to Mississippi. More law enforcement, more resources, which of course was problematic because you had Southerners who were members of the FBI. The Klan was everywhere then, everywhere. So that there goes that theory. It's just not a local thing. They're in government positions, government law enforcement positions. They're along in the FBI. You know, usually you see it in the movies, you know, in a local hick town that, you know, the Klansman is the sheriff and the chief of the town. But here it is. It's displayed that they're actually in the FBI, you know, crossing, you know, they can cross state lines. They have access to all types of information. And I just employ people to think bigger about the situation. Don't think about it in a way that you may have, or if you're not on that level, just think about it bigger. Just reevaluate how you think about this problem and how you think about racism. This is why I really enjoyed this book, and I was very excited to do this program on this book. LBJ and Senator Eastland weren't interested in how they died or who had killed them. They were only interested in appeasing their families and controlling the direction of media attention. They don't, so like I said, whites can be in conflict. They can show callousness and, you know, disdain for other whites, but, you know, We still maintaining this system. One monkey doesn't stop the show. Everything that was about to happen in the civil rights movement from here on out was because of Andrew Goodman and Mickey Schwerner's death. Again, if that's the truth, that just shows the power of what, you know, two well-meaning whites can do. What is that saying about the so-called other thousands or millions of well-meaning whites? What does that say? And I'll leave it at that. So much of the civil rights movement had been because of white people. I just keep highlighting these because it just rings home true. Okay, if that's the case, so what's the issue now? We have all these millions and billions of dollars behind these organizations. We have all the resources behind it. Why don't we have a different result now? Why is it just more confusion and white supremacy is still practiced the way it, I mean, like, why? I don't understand it for, you know, people that, you know, that go, that present the argument that, you know, you shouldn't be suspicious of all whites and, you know, things are much better. Like, why aren't we much further if, you know, in this instance, it only takes two whites to kick off this whole movement and make all these sweeping changes amongst, you know, these rights, these black people's rights. So what does that say about the, it just continues to highlight that for me. Excuse me. One group of white people are the oppressors. That's absolutely certain. But without the support of another group of white people, we would never have found our way. That's something that has to be brought out. I mean, have we found our way? I'll just leave that there. Lyndon B. Johnson was known as the civil rights president, but now we know that he didn't do it for his own volition. Everything that happened in terms of civil rights under LBJ was part of a power play for him to maintain his position. We can't be confused with good, nice gestures. Something seemingly nice. Deception is a major act of the upkeep of racism. I want to just nail that home. And what better passage than that? It was a chess move. It was a tactic. And, you know, black people have been like Democrats like ever since in large numbers, in majority numbers. I mean, more information is needed. LBJ did successfully get the attention off of the Vietnam War, but he paid the price for it that he had to give in to improve racial equality. Wow. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 didn't go nearly far enough, and it was really there just to appease the people, not because Johnson and his comrades in the Democratic Party believed in it. The reason for the Voting Rights Act in 1965 was precisely because the previous legislation was basically a scam on people of color. It didn't give us the real rights that we were looking for. It only paid lip service to oppression. I would just insert, we get more legislation, we get more paperwork. But, you know, I don't think legislation is the issue. I don't think, you know, getting, you know, whites to see what's going on. They know exactly what's going on. They write books on what's going on. They record history. They write articles. It's in the news what's going on. So it's not a lack of they're ignorant or they don't know. They know exactly what's going on. So it's not they know. They just are comfortable with the way things are. Continuing on, for all the good that came from the Johnson administration for black people, none of it was done out of the altruistic love of equality. LBJ played a chess game to try to maintain power, and black people paid for it with their lives. Senator James Eastland never had to repent for his wrongdoings or relinquish his power. He died on February 19, 1986 the law library at Ole Miss was named after him. There we go. Another heirloom to a racist. Keep them up. As long as the system is here. Keep them up. Let her make it plain. Make it plain. This is what we're about. We revere this racist. We're naming our school. We're naming our cafeteria, our classroom, this building. After this, leave those monuments up as long as we're in this system. Let's have accurate information out there. So chapter 13, future meets the past. All of the Christian civilization depends on the preservation of the upbuilding of the white race, the religion of white supremacy. That's why I put that piece in the beginning. You know, when they say Christian, I'm pretty sure non-white people and racist and suspected racist mean two different things. And I don't think that's understood by non-white victims of racism. So I will keep underlining that. The supremacy of the white race must be maintained or be overwhelmed by the rising tide of color. Is that what Ben Tillman? I think there was a book about Ben Tillman with that title, The Rising Tide of Color or something like that. So, which was a pretty, used phrase in white supremacy, the rising tide of color. Look at that metaphor. Think about that metaphor. Okay. Moving on. Black man, white supremacy. Okay. So I guess someone said to Mr. Killen that the Klan wanted to change their face, change their image, refinement, basically. I wished him luck with that. How in the world would the KKK going to change their image? The old man continued in his Mississippi cadence. They're devising a plot and a plan to get the community and public to see them differently for the first time ever. The world knows the images of violence, control, and fear that go along with the KKK. So right here, you see the refinement. So I only highlight this so people do not be fooled by good deeds. You know, you'll see reform racist, talks about XYZ and, you know, reform. Don't be fooled. Don't racist suspect at minimum. We're going to recruit a black man for the first time. Cole Thornton, also known as Charles Denton, is another imperial wizard of the KKK. Him and I have been devising a plan for quite a while before I was arrested, and we've been planning on recruiting a black man into the KKK and giving that black man the honor of being in a high position here so we can change our image. And I'll just take it to another point. The more refined races will get, a black person to spew their views. You know, we can have a Clarence Pendleton where, you know, what's that guy's name? Colin Flaherty or something. But he was, you know, authoring a lot of his talking points that got black people all riled up and black people focused on him and calling him, you know, the same names that you hear today, Coon Sambo, Uncle Tom, all that stuff like that. But his stuff was being authored and ghostwritten. We get mad at Jeff Lee Peterson when he says the stuff, but the producer of his show, James Hake, you know, openly uses the word nigger. So, I mean, that's a trick of the races that, you know, we'll get a black person to spew it, and that'll put all our focus on that black person. So this is why I stress the importance of a code of how you deal with black people, regardless of their views. I mean, just look at Senator Scott and, you know, even with Kamala Harris, you know, a black person says something wrong, what's perceived as wrong about it, and it's all out assault instead of keeping their eyes on the races. And, there's a myriad of examples. I was going to give some more, but I'll leave that there. I think I made my point with that. Let's continue on. Okay, change our image. Listen to this. Those glory days were described by him as the days when you could kill a good nigger. Change in public image and face of the KKK. We both agree with your intelligence and knowledge. You could be the first imperial wizard as a black man. This is unheard of now, but I can make it happen. You will have the support of the white Klan through me, and you will exceed or by having the support of all blacks I know you can recruit. You think of the history you will make. Just think of the history you will make. James, I've given you so much, so I feel for you owe me, my fellow comrade. I will introduce you to all by letters. You know, this probably was his whole aim from the jump. You know, get me out and, you know, help refine the system of racism. Let's make it go even further. Let's rehabilitate the image of the Klan, cause more confusion, to expand racism, to confuse black people even more about racism. It's good. Deception is key. That you have to understand that. You have to understand that about the system of racism. Deception is key. Thornton and Killen are offering me a chance to become the most powerful man in the history of their organization because I will have the full weight of the white people in the Klan as well as the power to recruit African American members into the Klan. Imagine the confusion. And you see, like, there's a guy, I can't think of his name, he's on YouTube, and, you know, he puts on the Klan uniform, the Southern Justice shirt paraphernalia, and goes around, and, you know, black people get upset. You can even put this on a level with Trump. A lot of people associate Trump with racism, and, you know, anyone with Trump paraphernalia on is, you know, Sambo, Coon, Uncle Tom, Sellout, you know, any other add a name. It's pretty much the same thing. And now this text, I hope, reveals the insidiousness of the plan. It's a bigger plan. It's someone else pulling strings. There's more powerful people. And that's why I just hope we can keep your eyes on the most powerful people who's pulling the strings. What else? What I couldn't wrap my mind around for the longest time is why in the world these two men will be willing to do this. What was the point? Why would it make sense at all to recruit black people into the KKK? At point blank, I asked this question to Edgar, who responded, "Well, if I put you in as a black imperial wizard, the world would be so busy giving you a hard time for accepting it." This, and I just said this, and they will be trying so hard to figure out our game. Let me just stop. I just said that. I pretty much just said that. They're going to be given, it's a distraction. It's used as a distraction to further our agenda. And that's done on a major scale. So this is just why I highlight. This is why I practice minimizing Mr. Fuller. I can't take credit for that. Mr. Fuller was the first person I heard, or Dr. Wells, and one of them. That's a heavy practice. Minimize conflict by minimizing contact is a core aspect of counter-racism. It's a core aspect for simple, like, for reasons just like this. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing when they get a black person to take their, you know, take the bait to get mad at another black brand. Put all your time and energy into a black person while the system is being spread and refined and expanded. So let me get back. We ultimately can do whatever we want, and we won't be in the spotlight for the first time in a long time. You have to admit that's an absolutely compelling way of reasoning it out. His point with this was just the same as the plan that LBJ and Senator Eastland had to take the heat off of Vietnam. Do something so extreme that it draws everyone's attention from the real issue. Tactics. More information is needed on the tactics of racism. This is what I do it for, to expose those tactics, to help victims put together patterns. You know, think of this when you're reading something, or think of this. I hope this sticks with people. Think of this. These are the tactics. Like, let's focus on, you know, whatever Sambo, Coon, Sellout, or black person you don't agree with. VGQ. Just give them VGQ and keep pushing. I mean, go on and keep your eyes on the most important people. I cannot stress that enough. Moving on. Edgar wrote another letter to me on the same subject after the first. In this letter, he presents not only his offer for my inclusion in the KKK as the first black leader, but also the further reasons that he has for my taking up this cause. He gives me the task of educating black people about staying in their place so they don't get hurt. Yeah. Old school, right? Stay in your place. And I don't even want to say old school because it is present today. Stay in your place. You do something out of pocket, you know, you get hit. You get touched. Something, you know, they'll let you know about it. That's still present. So it's not, I take back saying old school, but it's very explicit. I like, this is why I like it explicit. Edgar Ray Killen was working to convince me, a black man, of the inferiority of myself while at the same time praising me for my intelligence and faith. Glad he caught that. The appeal of my faith is striking her, and it illustrates our different views on what God means to people. Right. Right. This is why I put that clip in. We have different views of God and religion. You say Christianity, we may mean one thing, they mean something completely different. Edgar wholeheartedly believed that if I open my heart to God, then I see that God's plan was for black people to live under the boots of white. Oh man. This man truly believed every word he said about race, and he was convinced that this truth will reveal itself to everyone if they reasoned it out. Make it plain. While you are making your decisions, overseeing our family as the first Negro, which is, hold up, let me stop. So his use of the term Negro is his refinement from going from nigger to Negro, and this was in the 2000s. So, you know, Negro wasn't acceptable a long time ago. So he's like, he's real late, but this is his refinement. This is his refinement using the word Negro instead of nigger, which I'm sure in my heart you will accept such an extraordinary honor. Let me inform you of some basic schools of thought you must embrace. What the world's called segregation is just good common sense. The Negro and the white must draw a line between us. We must keep our blood pure. That's funny because, you know, I'll just use Strom Thurmond. He had a lot of these views, and, you know, he had a black daughter out there. Like, this isn't, they talk all this purity stuff. Meanwhile, just, you know, raping black people, sexually storing black people. So, you know, do they even believe this stuff? The communist Jewish bastards were training black men to rape at least one white woman a week. We know it was rape because no moral white woman would lay with a black man willingly. I'll just leave that there. I mean, you know, I'll leave that there. The law at the time would have let too many unlearned Negroes get away with this. I would just like to see evidence. I study a lot. I look for a lot. I would just send me some evidence of just why, where did you get this idea that, you know, black men just want to rape white women, want to rape, like, just, I mean, where do you get this information from? So justice was swift, and the crime rate was the lowest in the nation. Mississippi had the lowest crime rate in the 50 states. Your brother, friend, and comrade Edgar Ray Killen. He was serious as a heart attack about making this shift for the good of his cause. Right, refinement. Quite a number of people eventually bought into his plan until there was a consensus telling Edgar to go ahead and move forward with this scheme. Wow. I mean, took some convincing. It took, you know, hey, this is the further the situation. So this is why when you see these non-white people within these organizations, this could possibly be what it is. This is possibly what it is. A total scheme to cause confusion. James, if you hired Mr. Cole, you would be proud to call him a friend. As long as you are honest, Charles is not prejudiced. I mean, what's honest, not going along with some cockamamie story you want me to, like, that's very subjective, especially dealing with a suspected racist. He is in the process of helping black people organize to save our country from the enemy. Charles tells me he intends to change the image of the KKK. I wrote Charles, giving my permission for him to use my name in case to recruit worldwide, not logo, not Mississippi, not Jackson, worldwide. And he was very successful, especially in the northern states. The south usually gets the bad rap as the racist place. And success, especially successful in the normal. There's not enough information, logical information. We're not processing as a whole, as a people. And I just keep hammering out. I know I sound like a broken record, but this is just your day to day, your day to day. I never responded to any of the letters Edgar Ray Killen wrote to me requesting me to be the Black Imperial Wizard. I learned that my best course of action with Edgar Killen was always to keep my mouth shut. In this particular instance, I knew that the first time that I turned him down, he stopped writing to me. The communication between us would just be over. Great thinking. Good way to have foresight about that. You know, keep that flow of information going. We need it. We need this. Yeah, and in his letters to me, he clearly states that because I knew everything about him, the people he'd kill, along with all the inmate secrets regarding the Klan and its operation in Mississippi, that I had no choice but to accept his offer. Deception, insidiousness. He had a plan. He said, "I'll get this nigga to listen to me, and I'll butter him up." And you know, he has no choice but to accept this because I've been so good to him. And this is just further the cause of white supremacy. This will cause confusion, and we can expand this global operation. They're playing chess. They really play chess. He assumed all along that I feared retribution from the KKK, were I to come clean about what he told me or let loose any of the secrets. Threats of violence were the method of choice for Edgar and the Klan to control people, and that's precisely what he was doing with me. Clearly, on this point, it's critical to understand how this whole thing was to work. I would not be like a white Klan member. I would be akin to one of his animal or his dogs. But, you know, Edgar Ray Killen still was thinking back to when they had the two black people during the Democratic National Convention or whatever. You know, just have some black people sitting there, their mascot, and, you know, all the black. He didn't know we evolved in our thinking, our understanding of racism at that point. But, you know, he tried. And they have succeeded, you know, to a large degree, though, because, you know, that creates a lot of confusion, lots of distractions amongst victims to this day. We will show you how and when to take action in a nonviolent way. Boom. That's interesting. And the event membership is not right for you. We can use your assistance in a variety of supporting programs. We are an active worldwide organization striving to protect and preserve white Christian heritage and culture. Look at the language. Definitions are important. What's that mean? White Christian heritage and culture. If you want to play an active part in the preservation of the white race, you may submit an application for God, Race, and Nation. This is just a refinement of pretty much a lot of what you see today. You look at some of these sites and it's all these rosy, non-direct terms to cause confusion, to not have us think accurately about the situation. So this goes into the Tea Party. What most people don't realize is that the roots of the Tea Party aren't in populism or libertarianism. They're in Edgar Ray Killen. Save America is an organization that Killen founded for the purpose of giving his views a new form that would be easier to spread. He knew that it was no longer possible for him to forward his racist agenda just by being up front and out and about. He had to come to the American people through a veiled methodology. Refinement. I mean, he refined his code like that, like a true what a white supremacist does. Refine your code. This isn't working. Throw it away. Let's find a new way to make this work. Let's find a new way to do it. This is being like less effective. And, you know, I just see, you know, victims that just want to try the same thing from the 60s. And there's a lot of resistance to trying to do it a different way. So, you know, just use that, you know, for me, you know, I just see the contrast. I just see the confusion with that. Just as with the KKK, Edgar Ray Killen wanted me to play a role in saving the face of Save America. He felt strongly that if a black man were to be part of these organizations, they would be much more likely to succeed. Refine it. Edgar wrote a direct letter to the Tea Party that he wanted me to deliver when I got out. When I stepped out of jail with that letter in my hand, I contacted the Tea Party and told them who I was. I told them about Edgar Ray Killen and what he asked me to do. The head of the Tea Party asked me to give them the original letter from Killen and never to mention it to anyone again. In that letter, Edgar told them what he expected out of them and that he had held them to the standard of carrying on the work of his racist cause. So I'm just a little confused as to why, you know, even after he was released from prison, that he, you know, continued to do the work. I'm just a little bit confused by that. But, you know, VGQ, after it was all over the place, the Tea Party was so busy trying to make me their friend that they invited me to be a speaker at their events. I was a frequent guest speaker at Mississippi Tea Party events after my time with Edgar Ray Killen. And the media, of course, showed up to see why. They got an earful about my views of inclusion and condemnation of racist ideology. VGQ, I mean, no critique of the victim, no criticism of the victim and his response, but some things are just mind-boggling about that. But, you know, unfortunately, Mr. Stern isn't, you know, here with us to get a little bit more clarity on his tactic, because he very well could have been working on another, you know, tactic to expose racism in a different form. But, you know, unfortunately, he passed away, so we'll never know. Let's continue on. Where was I? Edgar Ray Killen never backed down from his views, though he was often faced with the notion of people believing that he had gone soft. In fact, he hadn't softened in a bit. His heartfelt message was the same in 1964 as it was, and it was more than 15 years later, that the white race was superior to the black. He dressed it up in different clothes, the KKK, Save America, the Tea Party, but underneath it was all still the same. Yeah, I mean, that's the conclusion I came to. It's all the same. They just refined it. It's just refined. So let's just look at the more refined racists. They can go to the protests and march with you and yell at the police. And meanwhile, nothing is getting done. But you see, there's examples of when they want something done, they get it done. Snap of a finger, stroke of a pen, they get things done. But, you know, they don't mind, you know, engaging in, you know, things that aren't going to bring about, you know, justice for the people of the known universe. So, let's continue on. We're powering through. We're almost done with this. Yeah, they accused them of going soft by, you know, refining itself. Some people didn't see they didn't see the vision of the old man. Okay, some say I become soft in my older age. Even my attorney I had on my case, Robert Ratliff of Alabama. Let me assure you, the same message I had for the white man in 1964, I have got it even stronger for him today. James, this goes also for the black man. You're not the average black man, not at all. That's why I tell you, with my worldwide recognition I have among my brothers and comrades, with me backing you, If you agree to with me, I will make you more than famous and rich. My influence spreads out more than My influence spreads out to more than five countries. Save America cannot and must not fail. The white race is dependent on it, and you will be our favorable black man with all the power and influence that comes within. a world that is a white man's. This just goes to how they think about black people. You know, give a nigger some power and status and he'll sell out, you know, everything. He'll lose all his morals and, you know, everything for the betterment. Like he stated that earlier. You know, niggers don't stick together. They turn against each other. And this is just demonstrated just in a refined way. This is just demonstrated in a refined way. Given the dramatic rise of the Tea Party and their eventual bowing of the Republican Party back into power, it seems that if killing wasn't too far off the mark, over the course of the last 20 years, the number of hate groups in America has more than doubled, according to Southern Poverty Law Center. They didn't even need me to be the black man out front, as there have been multiple high-profile black conservatives, correct, who have stepped up to the front of the Tea Party in it as unwitting ambassadors of the views of men like Edgar Wright. That's what I said earlier. They have them now. So even if it wasn't this person, they'll get another one. The system of racism is a manufacturing system for so-called sellouts, coon samples, or whatever term you want to use. It's a manufacturing system for that. And they, like Mr. Fuller says, they pump them out faster than you can break them. So that, you know, that notion, if we just get rid of the Uncle Tom, it's just not logical. And I used to subscribe to it. If we just get rid of the Uncle Toms, we can just be so much further. We can get rid of, and it's, when you think about it, it's just not logical. It's just, you know, it's not logical. It can't happen. So this wrapping it up, not wrapping it up, but moving closer to wrapping it up. Killen's final word on race and me. It's important to me to stress to you that I have not in any way softened my views or messages about the state of black men in this country. I feel they should not be segregated, and it's 100% impossible for a Negro to have more. Okay, this is killing talking. All right. Impossible. And it is 100% impossible for a Negro to have morals. The quicker the black race know and accept this, the faster the country can heal and move forward. Give it to me straight and plain. Those are your views. Fine. I'll move accordingly. We don't have more. It's impossible for a Negro to have morals while you're sitting there in feces and in your own waste for weeks or months at a time. But, oh well. As I said before, though, he never once treated me as an equal. As highly as he spoke of me, I was always an animal to him. I'm glad Mr. Stern recognized this. He saw other black men as wild dogs. Edgar Ray Killen viewed me as a tame house pet. In this letter to me, Edgar shares with me just how coldly he thought of me. This confessed killer threatened me with deadly retribution should I cross him, and he was clear as to how easily and unthinkably he could do it. This letter is as chilling as a chilling one for me to read even to this day. I'll read the whole once I find my thing. Okay, James, my friend, time don't seem to be on our side. For you, it is coming to an end. How does it feel to write out what could be your future or end? You know what you were doing, getting into when you started this. You like for me to dictate all the juicy stuff. Now take this with you. I doubt your mind can even wrap around the things with which I have empowered you with. Niggers are smart, but have no morals. Values were never meant for a nigger. All best, you. This is actually his actual letter. So there's a little things that are incoherent to me. All best, you're the animal in a circus. You follow orders well. Point in case, no white man would have endured the treatment you have from the uptake. It is because no matter how fond I am of you, like my pet, you are still just a nigger. Make it plain, sir. Make it plain. Yes. And as I say, as the Klan says, you will live. There is no way on God's earth I, Edgar Ray Killen, will allow you to live if you cross me. You seem shocked about this letter. I'll sign the son of a bitch because I know who I am and what I'm capable of. I got nothing to lose now. but everything to gain. Eternal life. Are you ready for eternal life? You see, everybody wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die. You have to die, James, to go to heaven. If you die at my hands, my orders, because I know you're thinking like a nigger, Edgar's up. Let me tell you what a phone call can do to you. The day I decided to actually kill those niggers I told you about, I elevated to a status among my brothers and comrades that allows me and only say the word. Mitch Moran is an example of my power. I believe Mitch Moran is the guy, the lawyer he had killed, I believe. Eyes are always on you, boy. Boy. The man not. Always, if you ever have any thought of crossing me, read this letter again and again. I regret the others I wrote to you because they will be problems if they come to the light. The power of the Klan will be in your hands. Money, fame, and protection. Cole Thornton, who you know as Charles Denton, will see to your every need. Baby Dow will let me know if you're acting up. Make us proud. There is work to do. Now look at that. Look at that. I can, you know, tell you all that, and still I want you to do some work for me. The audacity. What do you think about a person to even pen something like that, and at the end of it, there's work to do. Get to work, you know. Come on. You have good people working with you. White people always stick together. Niggers fight each other. I wish I could tell you about Jesse Jackson. You know he really wasn't next to King when he was shot, but he lied and built the story. You know, white people, they're quick to point out the infighting with black people, regardless of it's amusing. A sport enjoyed by all, like Mr. Fuller said. A sport enjoyed by all. That's why my coach is to limit anti-blackness, limit arguments. They enjoy it. They encourage it. The system feeds off it. It's gasoline for it. You know, it makes it go. So, you know, like I said, make it plain and direct. I love it. I love it. Make it plain and direct. So Edgar Ray killing is important. According to Edgar's personal confession, the Ku Klux Klan hung as many white people as they did black people. I don't know how true that is, but you know, you got to get in line, you know, or you'll get in trouble with whites. So they can't be ignorant about racism. The Klan's issue was there were so many white people, including the Jews, that were supporting the black community. Let me just start over. The Klan's issue was there were so many white people, including the Jews, that were supporting the black community's quest for civil rights and freedom, and their numbers were only growing. The Klan believed that it had to rule and control the world with an iron fist of fear and intimidation. So when the Klan thought that someone was a black sympathizer, they called that person a nigger lover. They painted it on the doorsteps of other white people suspected of being black sympathizers. This was a warning to all people that this would be your plight if you continue as a black sympathizer. And let me stop right here before we get to the next part. Basically about that. Like all that is different groups of white people disagreeing on the practice of racism. That's all that is. They're disagreeing. They're having a disagreement. And as we can see with now, the refined way is the most effective way to do it. That's why we have what we have now. This is why when, you know, you had the reaction to Donald Trump and, you know, with Joe Biden's past, you know, it's all on display. It's all off public information. In this text, he's connected to open white supremacists. You know his relationship with Strom Thurmond, and we can bypass all that. He can go on platforms like the Breakfast Club and talk about if you don't vote for me, you're not black. He can do that. He can do a 94 crime bill and be forgiven, because we've been conditioned to think of this problem as a certain way. There has to be a good one. There has to be a good side and a bad side. Or pick the lesser of two evils. No, that's not how it works. That shouldn't be how it works. And the fact that, you know, we're going to terrorize you because you don't agree with what are our methods. But, you know, our common goal is to dominate the nigger. Period. So that is, hopefully that isn't lost in translation. And as you can see, the refined races won out. You can see that the more direct ones tried to tried to refine it later on, which is explicit in his text. They tried to, you know, he was just years late behind it. So, you know, two wings on the same bird. That's my metaphor. Two wings on the same bird. An innocent white woman, Heather Hare, we had to have a Heather Hare mention, was killed by a white supremacist during those protests. Let me just ask this. I'll just ask a question. Could it be that Heather Hare disagreed with the practice of racism that those people did, and she could have possibly been racist herself? She just disagreed with the method and was protesting the method, but not the correct treatment and justice for black people. Could that be possible? I'll just leave that there. Just think about it. But she's put up as a martyr, like, all the time. So next chapter, entitled 40 Acres as a Tool. After everything that we've been through, living side by side, this is about Mr. Killen Killen signing over, you know, his rights to land and to Mr. Stern. And, you know, he signed over some things to him. And Mr. Stern is talking about, you know, dedicating murals and Civil Rights Museum to preserve the history during the worst time. So I don't know the status of it today. He's trying to do some constructive things, you know, with the land at the time. And I recently saw something. I was doing some research, and someone, I guess a white person, vehemently disagrees with the assessment that Mr. Stern owns or owned the land at some point. So that's one thing. So here's some more prints of the white. We're closing out, and you know that white writer still has her mitts all over this thing. For example, Harriet Tubman made 13 rescue missions as part of the Underground Railroad and rescued more than 70 black slaves through the network of anti-slavery activists, safe houses known as the Underground Railroad. Who were those white people who sheltered her at great cost to themselves and their families? Those are the names we don't know if we just read our standard history. VGQ, should they be celebrated for doing the correct thing? You know, if they helped out, should there be celebration with that? I'll just leave that there. Should they be celebrated by just doing something constructive for something that shouldn't have been? There shouldn't have been a need for an Underground Railroad. So here's the continued work of Mr. Stern up until his death. In the context of today's issue, I maintain an open line of communication with white supremacist groups like National Socialist Movement to bring about improvements of racial unity, VGQ, things like this. Is why I could see why, you know, whites may like this text, but just keep in mind all the what I just talked about, all that I have read about different tactics, the refinement. Could this be refinement? Could it not be? Keep in mind, what does it mean to be white? What is racism? Have a working definition, logical, working, constructive definition for your word, especially racism. Here's more. There's a long history of civil rights groups working with alt-right organizations to make change, including the 1961 summit between Malcolm X and the American Nazi Party. Of late, I advocated intensely for the prosecution of hate crimes under the RICO Act, a piece of federal legislation that's used to prosecute organized crime. It's been a useful time for combating gang violence all over the world. All over the United States. And I find that interesting that you would use a RICO Act on, you know, low-level gang members before you use it on a well-organized machine. I mean, I thought it was freedom and justice for all. That's what they said. Or is it just words? It never, but, okay. And, we're in the epilogue, so, yeah, this is about it. Oh, right here. Yeah, I'll just close it off with this. Mr. Stern actually had a tough time. Whites gave him a tough time with getting this work, this book out. And they tried to bury it, so to speak. And, you know, and when I look, there seems to be about two or three different variations of the book. And it's hard to see if anything is different about this or if there's anything added about the books. Or, you know, the covers are different. The titles are different. So it's a lot unclear about these books. So, you know, let's just keep this in mind with all that. You know, deception is the biggest trick. So we don't really know what's been altered, what has been doctored and fixed between one edition to the next, if anything. Just something to keep in mind. Where I thought the hard part would be getting it all down on paper, it turned out that the real challenge would be in getting the written words out into the world. Members of the KKK are in high places wearing suits, not hoods. I mean, I would just, let's stop the KKK racist. Just say races are in high places wearing suits, not hoods. Racist. Time to refine that. The original person to approach me as a publisher turned out to have motives far more sinister than I could have ever believed. In fact, he went by a name that was not his and a corporation that was revoked some 5 years back by the Nevada Secretary of State. Sorry. Let me just pause. And this is, you know, information is lacking. We need information. So this is what I do. Some people don't see the need for more information. But this man has, you know, experienced racism probably more up close and in depth as a lot of people. And things are still shocking him. He still can't conceive how sinister and things that the system can be. And this is no fault of his. He's a victim of racism, like we all are. So this is why we need more information about the system. We need more connections. We need more patterns of behavior to further understand how to, you know, take the next step of producing justice for everyone, not just, you know, getting back at white people or, you know, doing something sinister to people. Nah, justice. Justice is what we need. That's better than, you know, anything. Because, you know, there's no sense in flipping the ties or having Asian supremacy or black supremacy or Indian justice. Justice is good for everybody. But let me continue on. Revoke some 5 years back by the Secretary of State, Nevada Secretary. Delay after delay came up, pushing the public release of this story further and further into the future. He fought to keep the copies of the actual letters written by Edgar Ray Killen out of this book so you can never read them. But you would have wondered, did they ever exist? Eventually, it was made clear that there never was an intention on making good on those original promises of solidarity. This book you're reading right now is never going to see the light of day. What followed was an effort to discredit my story, to bury it in service of the very principles that I have fought so hard against. Trust became broken, faith in a once treasured friendship evaporated, and the truth that racism is everywhere once again came out. And that's the end of that text. Like I said, more information that just hammers it home. You know, to even say treasured friendships are evaporated. I mean, what does it mean to be right? What does it mean to be white? What does it mean to be racist? Ask yourself these questions. Come up with a working, functional definition for this. Can't be surprised by this thing. It's not, you know, no fault of the victim, but I'm just saying, moving forward, how do we build a code? How do we, you know, relate? Is it? How do we intake it? How do we process it? Just question. I mean, use logic with this stuff. So, and strangely enough, Mr. Stern died maybe a little less than a year than his book's release. So, you know, and they said he had cancer. I believe he died of cancer. And so, you know, that's strange, him being in that prison with all those medical, who knows, they do all types of experiments in these facilities, these greater confinement facilities. So, you know, it's just a lot of questions, and this is just the system that we're in. And, you know, I'm appreciative of Mr. Stern's work and, you know, for getting this out to, you know, give victims a better understanding of racism. This was an excellent piece and very constructive. This is why, you know, I decided to bring forth this this program doing a review of this text. And yeah, so the next program probably will be the film review of Buck Breaking. I just actually finished it for the first time. I have to go back and do my notes on it. Very, very constructive film by Tariq Nasheed. Excellent film. And hopefully get some counter racist information logic regarding that film for the next show. And that's about it. And just gonna cut it out right here, because you know, not much more to say. Just, you know, think about different concepts, think about racism, what it means, how does it work, use logic, what's practical, and let's come up with a solution to this problem. Until next time, hopefully it won't be a next time and this problem will be solved, but if not, you know, we'll be back with some more constructive information. Thank you for using your time and your energy. I hope it was constructive. I hope it was some benefit. Pass it on. I appreciate it. And take care. Be safe.